It is, in fact, November, 8 days before Thanksgiving, but let's talk gardening. Just how much have people embraced gardening this year? Here's one indication. Oregon State University offers Master Gardener short courses online. The statewide coordinator says normally 20 to 30 people sign up for each course. Last April, more than 29,000 people registered for just the course on vegetables. So that's why we reached out to Master Gardeners to talk us through gardening issues. Lynn Kunstman joined us once a week through the growing season. Now she joins us once a month to answer our questions. And Lynn, I hope there are no dumb questions.
There are none.
Good, because I ask them all the time. But and in fact, I got one the other day that well, not a question per se, but just thinking about, I was walking past a neighbor's house where there are raised beds, and I know they had some stuff that was still growing in there, that you know, wintry type cabbagey crops, and then I saw all the wet leaves on top of it. I thought, oh look, it's just as if nature. Oh boy, that's the whole point of gardening. I get it now. Is to do what nature would have done.
That's right. Yeah.
It's
a good thing to take our cues from nature.
Mm-hmm.
Did we
wander far away from that? I mean, you know, when you consider like industrial agriculture, and granted, it's not the same thing as gardening, though. It seems like that we, you know, we kind of moved away from the things that nature did to help our things grow naturally.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, just think about lawns. You know, my big bugaboo.
Mm-hmm.
People keep those mowed and raked. And basically sterile year round, and you know, when trees drop their leaves, the leaves return nutrients to the trees that drop them. So that's an important thing that we're removing from the landscape. But also underneath those leaves, there's an entire ecosystem of overwintering insects that are crucial for ecosystem services and biodiversity and food webs in your neighborhood. And we want to support food webs in our neighborhoods. And so, you know, putting leaves, if you're going to rake them off your lawn, be sure you put them under your shrubs or on your garden beds or, you know, at worst in your compost pile, because then some of those insects are going to be lost as it decomposes. But basically, if you can get them in under your shrubbery, or leave them under the trees, that's the best thing. That's what nature does.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows best.
So if you're putting them back under the trees, confine them to the drip line, or can you bring them in tighter than that? Or what's the usual recommendation?
You can bring
there?
Them in a little tighter. And of course, you want to make sure they're away from the base of the tree so rodents aren't getting in there and chewing at the bark of your cambium layer of your trees.
Mm-hmm.
But leaving them there, underneath the tree or even on the lawn, they are not going to kill your lawn. This is a fallacy. Lawns go dormant in the winter, and the leaves that are there will decompose enough by spring that the lawn is going to be able to come back up through that detritus. So, it's a visual thing that we want to see is a clean, raked lawn. You know, people think that leaves are, and we call them litter, which is a bad thing. It's like calling milkweed a weed.
Right.
No, it's a native plant. It's not a weed. And yes, it can be weedy in its growth habit, but, you know, we misname things, and leaf litter is not litter. It's
okay.
Gold. You know?
All right. So really important stuff under there. But talk about the insects then, the overwintering insects.
Most of our native bees nest in the ground. They need that insulative layer of leaves that falls naturally, or grass that decomposes and lays down, providing a cover over the entrance to their nest. We have, hundreds of species of native bees are in the ground. Butterflies and moths, most of them overwinter in the ground, or not in the ground, but on the surface of the ground, and are covered by a layer of leaves that protects them. Some of them actually wrap themselves in leaves. They make cocoons and chrysalises that look like dried leaves.
Wow.
And so our butterflies and moths are there. Also, thousands of species of native flies, and most of our native flies are beneficial. They are not house flies. They are predatory flies. You know, they take the bad things out of your yard. So many, and beetles, of course, are there under that leaf cover and need to be protected.
All right. So if you take the leaf cover off, obviously there's just no place for them to be.
They're gone. You bag them up and send them to the landfill. They get into a compost pile and they become compost which, okay, that's good for your yard, but the food web in your neighborhood has been demolished. Mm-hmm. birds aren't going to be there in the summer to breed because you've taken away all the hope of any caterpillars and insect food for them.
All right, so this for the people who think they're not ecologists, this is easy to understand, though. I mean, if you interrupt the food web, if you like birds, for example, you will consider keeping some leaves on your lawn.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the birds have to feed their young caterpillars. They can't feed them seeds. The babies will die if fed seeds. And so all birds, even our seed-eating birds, have to feed caterpillars. Caterpillars come from moths and butterflies. Moths and butterflies overwinter in leaves. If you remove the leaves, you're removing all the caterpillar and potential caterpillar food for the birds in spring. So people put in these beautiful pollinator gardens because they think they're helping the butterflies. Well, you're helping the adult butterflies by providing a floral resource. But if you don't provide food plants that the caterpillars eat and the leaves to protect the adults over winter, you're shooting yourself in the foot.
For the people who think, well, I don't mind having some leaves in the lawn, but I want to run the mulching mower over them. Your whole leaves are still sound like they're the best thing for them.
Yeah, the mulching mower, what that will do is return the nutrients of those leaves to your lawn, and that's fine. But it will grind up anything that's in a pupa or chrysalis or, Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing as running the leaves through a shredder. Mm-hmm. Yes, you'll have mulch, but you probably won't have those insects because they'll get ground up in the process. So, yeah, whole leaves, I recommend people just gently rake them in up under their shrubbery and let them decompose naturally over the winter.
Lynn Kunstman back here on the Jefferson Exchange for her monthly visit to talk about gardening and what's going on in the natural world, because it does not just die in the winter, as we have learned over a couple of different conversations. You're welcome to join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, observations, things you have done with your own property to help encourage things to grow. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Man, I am just all about the caterpillars now. So talk about the food plants that you were just talking about that help them.
So food plants. So those are our native plants. Our insects here in the Rogue Valley and everywhere around the world, insects have co-evolved with native plants to be able to overcome the toxic chemicals that the plants produce, because plants don't want to be eaten. And so the caterpillars have to eat something. They have to eat vegetation. They have to eat greens. And so every type of caterpillar and moth species has specialized on a certain family or even genera of plants and has been able to overcome the chemicals that those plants produce. So they have to have the plants they co-evolved with. If you're planting non-native plants in your yard, and most of us are, that's what most landscaping is now, they're plants from Asia or Europe. And those plants, our caterpillars can't eat. And so by planting native plants, you are providing food for birds in your yard, the natural food that birds eat, the food that the parent birds must feed their young. They have to feed them those fat bratwurst caterpillars that they can stuff down the baby bird's throat because the baby can't eat hard food. And so nestlings cannot eat hard food. They have to have caterpillars. To have caterpillars, you have to have native plants. And to maintain bird populations, the estimate is that you need about 70% of the biomass in your yard to be native vegetation. And we're nowhere near that in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, do we tend to be, what, in the low teens maybe?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea what the estimation is, but, we have so much acreage in just lawn, mm-hmm. which is non-native and shallow-rooted, that if everybody in the United States took out half their lawn, just half mm-hmm. of their current lawn, we'd have more acreage than all of our national parks combined. If you took out half the lawn and planted natives, you'd have more acreage in native plants than all of our national parks combined. So it's a stunning amount of wasteful and polluting lawn that we have in place. And you know, biomass, when you think about biomass, you need to think about the green that's in your yard, the leaves, the grasses, all the things that are green. So if you have a big tree in your yard that's a native tree, then you've got a lot of the biomass right there. You know, you can have up to 50% of the biomass in just one large tree because of there's so much green there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an important thing for people to know. And, of course, you know, most people aren't even aware of it. Mm-hmm. Most landscapers aren't aware of it. You know, they just put in what the nursery sells them.
Sure, so, sure, and trying to make it all look pretty and organized, and do the drip irrigation thing. But I mean, what's the top of the list for the folks in the Rogue Valley then? If they say, okay, I want to put the quintessential native plant in my yard.
Right. Yeah. I actually have a list of the top 20 native plants that you can plant for specifically for the Rogue Valley,
mm-hmm.
and you know it's primarily you know the ones that have the most species of caterpillar and butterfly are, of course, the trees. Willow, oak, our native pines, those kinds of things. Some of those are too big to put on city lots,
mm-hmm.
you know, or willows. You don't want them getting into your drain lines, right?
Right.
But there are shrubs that host hundreds and dozens of species of moth and butterfly. And so things like serviceberry and chokecherry is a smaller tree. The native hawthorn is a smaller tree that you can put in your yard. They're really powerful producers of insect food for birds. And so if I will send the list to you, if you want to put it as a link.
I do. I absolutely do.
I will send it to you after our conversation this morning, and people can have it. And it's based on the work of Dr. Doug Talamy out of the University of Delaware, mm-hmm. who's an entomologist who's done most of this research.
Yeah, he was on the program. Yeah, we had a great talk with him about the fact that if everybody just put a little bit of their yard to helping get ecosystems together, we'd have so much more biological diversity.
Mm-hmm. He's doing such incredible work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really, I mean, it's the reason that I'm such a zealot myself. I discovered him several years ago and went, oh my God, how have I been missing this?
Uh-huh.
And you know, so yeah, he's a wonderful, and there are so many of his talks on YouTube. It's well worth spending an hour watching him.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Lays it out.
Yeah. We had a great time talking to Doug Talamy earlier this year. Linda Kunzman is back here on the Jefferson Exchange from Jackson County Master Gardeners to answer our questions about gardening and just generally keeping something natural outside of our houses. And you can join us on the exchange with your questions, your comments at 800-838-3760, or you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Heidi in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Oops, somebody's listening to us in the delay. You have to get over to the phone. Get to the phone. Come on, Heidi. Come to the phone.
Here's a call from Heidi in Medford.
Hey.
Hi. Heidi, don't listen to us on the radio. We're 10 seconds behind you there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm fine. I have a question for Lynn. She is the gardener to my heart. I have raised beds, and I put some leaves in the raised beds to cover the soil. Should I dig them in now, and put on another layer, or should I just leave well enough alone with one layer?
Okay, good question. Whether or not to put the leaves further in there, what do you say?
Yeah, it's kind of a choice. I mean, I wouldn't dig them in. I would leave them just to let the worms come up and decompose them and get them into your soil that way. And then in the spring, if they're still on the beds, just pull them back, you know, and plant your vegetables. Once the vegetables are up and growing, then push them back under the base of the vegetables as summer mulch to maintain the water if you have any that are left. I would just leave them and let them decompose naturally. I think it's a better thing. By the way, hi, Heidi. I miss you.
And thanks for the question.
Heidi and I are in a watercolor class together.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. You know, all the connections that we've had to just sort of stash by the wayside this year.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah. I'm glad we get to visit about gardening, though. This is fun. let's bring in Karen in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, I'm getting mounds of dirt on my lawn. I mean, I know you don't like lawn. but how do I get rid of it? I don't even find a hole. I've heard that you can put bubble gum down the holes and get rid of them. I don't know if any of that's bad.
I don't know about bubble gum. That's a good one. I don't know. There are some pretty good... I wish I remembered the name of the gopher trap. There's a gopher. It's a really effective trap. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the name of it. That's terrible.
But it's a humane trap?
It's not a humane trap.
Oh, okay.
It's a kill 'em dead trap.
Okay.
What I would do if I had a lawn, and I have in the past, I just go out and rake those mounds down, spread them out, mm-hmm. because I don't mind having the rodents. The rodents are providing burrows for snakes to overwinter in. They're providing holes for bumblebees to find to build their nests. Queen bumblebees look for rodent holes to enter to build their nests inside. And those little critters provide some services that, I know it's annoying to look out on your lawn and see a mound of stuff, but there is a great, it's some kind of a gun. It's a great, and it's very effective because a lot of the traps, the kill traps, are kind of hit and miss,
uh-huh.
but there is one, and you would have to Google it, but it works kind of like a little cannon. It just gets them.
So how do you know if you're dealing with a gopher or a mole, though? Because I get the same ridges in my yard, and I do what you do. I just kind of kick them apart. You know, I spread the dirt around.
Right, right, right. So the gophers and the ground squirrels will actually push up a hill of soil.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to, you're going to, you, like she said, she has mounds of dirt in her yard. It's soil that they've excavated from the burrow, and they just kick it up into a little volcano near the hole,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
then you've got a little mound of dirt on your lawn. moles are not plant eaters. They're insectivores, and they go just below the surface of the soil looking for insects, and so they push up that ridge. When you see a long ridge that's kind of snaking through your mm-hmm. garden or your lawn, and it's kind of split down the middle because obviously something's pushed it up and sideways, those are moles. And so I also like to have them in the yard. They're good little guys too. They are tilling your soil naturally. They are providing services in your yard, ecosystem services in your yard. As much as we hate those things and we hate what they do to our yards and gardens, the moles will not affect unless they uproot your plant.
Mm-hmm.
They're not eating the roots of the plant. Ground squirrels and gophers are eating the roots of your plants. and so if they're, you know, you look in your garden and see your zucchini vine disappearing down a hole, yeah, you got a ground squirrel, I've seen that. It's an astonishing sight.
Disappear down the hole?
The plant just goes down. It's like yank, 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 and then the plant is gone. Yeah. it's just astonishing and maddening. And so I do understand why people want to trap them.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate the tilling myself. It's not something I would do anyway. But
yeah,
it gets to be a pain when you run it over with a lawnmower if the grass is really high. But
you always want to rake those down mm-hmm. before you try to mow. That's a yes. Don't try to mow over those mounds of soil.
Yeah, I was laughing when you said dirt instead of soil because I was really working hard to make sure that I wrote down soil for another question.
Yeah, I know. It's like dirt is like the gardener's four-letter word. You know, you don't need it's soil.
Right.
It's
okay.
Always
so
soil. Yeah.
All right. So one of the questions I had though, when we talk about leaves over beds and things like that, I mean, it is the natural state for soil never to really be exposed, isn't it?
Well, in some cases, but I mean, obviously in nature, there are many areas of open soil. The wind blows the leaf litter away,
sure. mm-hmm.
and you actually do need some open soil in your yard because many of our native bees have to have an open area of undisturbed soil that they can see and find their burrows in where they are going to go and build their nests. So lots of our little native bees drill down into the soil directly, and they can't deal with leaf cover.
Mm-hmm.
So So it depends on, you know, where in your yard. If there are places where you want bare open soil, that's actually a good habitat to provide for some little bees and beetles and those kinds of guys that need open areas to nest in.
Okay, good to know. So just again, yeah. You know, try to let nature do what nature is doing and don't feel like you have to intervene with everything. Yeah.
Think about how nature does it. You know, nature uses the wind to move leaves. Nature leaves leaves on the ground. And so, yeah.
Anything, I was just looking at the pest monitoring and management from the November in the Garden from OSU. And what about leaves around fruit trees? Is there anything special you need to do there?
Yeah, so fruit trees are kind of a special situation because many of our fruit trees, especially here in the valley, harbor some pests that we don't want getting into the fruit. And so it's best to get the debris and litter out from under your fruit trees. If you're growing fruit trees, you want to remove the litter. You want to definitely remove any old fruit mm-hmm. that's lying on the ground. And oftentimes I tell people, put those in your yard bin mm-hmm. and get them off site so that they do get composted in the hot piles out at the transfer station.
Okay.
Because we want those insect pests like coddling moths, we want those killed off. And so that will help in terms of you maybe not having to spray as often all home gardeners are supposed to be spraying their fruit trees on the agricultural schedule because of the big agriculture that we do in the valley. Here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good to know that. Because I left apples on the ground the last couple of years and it wasn't a great situation.
Right.
So, okay, we're fixing it now. Lynn yeah. Kunstman, Jackson County Master Gardener. It's always great to have you on the Jefferson Exchange.
All right.
Take care.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.